Good morning to everybody. We're just about to start the class. We'll commence in about 2 minutes. And we'll continue with Qoheleth chapter 3. That's Ecclesiastes. Doug. Good morning, Cal.
Good morning, Rabbi. How are you doing?
Good. Thank God. How was your week?
It's a good Tov and a good project, everybody.
How are you doing there, Rivka?
Oh, Baruch Hashem. Thank you.
Good to hear.
Thank you.
Did you have a good vacation, Rabbi?
I was just, my brother's son had a bar mitzvah get together last Sunday upstate, so I couldn't be. It was just that one day.
Oh, okay. All that went well?
Yeah, thank God. It was nice.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Good, good.
All right, so we're in chapter 3, and we talked, we started it 2 weeks ago. We said the first thing that we noticed was that the King Solomon was saying there's a time for everything. A time for birth, a time for death, time for building, time for destruction, time for war, time for peace. He went through a number of areas and attitudes, and we said that the reason what he's saying is to show you that the converse, I mean, again, every time a person of great wisdom or the Torah tells us something, it's in order to correct what we might have thought otherwise. And we always use the example of, stealing. You're told not to steal, because without being told that, the predisposition of a person is to want to have more possessions, even at the cost of taking it from somebody else. And the bottom line is that in the areas of morality, a person would not know whether it's right or wrong, because it's a subjective system. If God told us that something is correct in the area of morality, then that's what makes it correct. That's why there's going to continually be dispute over whether, you know, right to life, abortion, whether pro-life or pro-abortion, because it's a subjective area. You can't really determine it on your own. There are areas that you can determine on your own. For example, you know that 2 plus 2 equals 4. There's certain objective truths, but there are things that are very subjective, and a person would not know whether it's correct or incorrect on their own. Okay, so that applies also to what the King Solomon is saying over here, is that a person has to be told by King Solomon there's a time for certain things. In other words, the opposite is not true. And what's the opposite? The opposite is that certain things can be right all the time. What King Solomon is telling us is that, no, there's a time that it's proper, a time that it's not. But his point is to address a psychological principle, and that is that what people look for is to have a security in their values or their happiness. Right? That's it. Somebody has their... You can put on your mute buttons, please, so this way there's no... Okay, thank you. So, if you tell a person that there's a time for doing this, you know, building is not always a good thing. Sometimes building is not a good thing, for whatever reason. Or sometimes dancing is not always the right response. And that's being told to a person by King Solomon because a person wants it to always be so. A person is insecure. People have insecurity by nature. In order to get rid of that insecurity, because insecurity is a bothersome thing. So to get rid of it, a person will look at something and say, ah, this is good. This is always good. So now he has a security, and this is something like, for example, idolatry. People make little idols, and they carry them around, and because this way they feel that there's a permanence of a good power in their life. They can't really approach life with courage. A lot of people have a problem with that, and they can't just take on what the day brings them and address things as they come up. They need to have some sense that everything will go well today. That's the horoscope. It's also, you see there's a wide range of involvements that all cater to this one need. So that's why King Solomon says, if we're trying to pursue truth, we have to recognize nothing is proper 100% of the time. It depends on the situation. So don't look for something and say, "Oh, this is always a good. This will now get me out of my insecurity." No, the way you approach life is, if you're not sure about something, so figure it out and work out the best situation. And there's also the problem that people exaggerate pains about certain things in life, and they feel that certain things are negatives when really they're not. There may be certain inconveniences, there may be certain things I have to do during my day, but that's not life. Life is really where a person is engaged, and we say this so many times, a person is engaged in pursuing something which is of interest to the mind, because then the entire person is engaged. Then a person is very happy. The happiest they can be is when the central part of the human being is involved. If that's thwarted, if a person pursues activities and attitudes that do not satisfy the most central part of us, which is our intelligence, so then we are constantly dissatisfied. We may get excited for a moment, for a few days. Here, we're going to go on a vacation. We'll go here. We'll buy that. But it's the fantasy that propels us and convinces us temporarily that there will be some good until we finally get there. It's funny. There's an interesting phenomenon by vacation, and that is, as long as a person is here and not there at his destination, so this fantasy is very exciting because I'm going to be there. It's a place that's away from where he is right now. So as long as he can fantasize about it, then it's still not where he is, meaning he's going to a new location. But once he gets there and he's now in that location, now the reality of him being there removes the fantasy, because now he is in the location. And then he realizes, you know, this tree's here just like they were at home, and there's traffic here, and this is a little bit warmer than I thought it would be. It's a little bit humid, and, you know, one of my bags got lost. Whatever the unknowns were, but once you get into the reality, once you finally travel and you get to that destination spot, so it's no longer in the realm of fantasy, because now you're there. You're finally standing in the spot. Now there's nothing else to do except to embrace reality. But the point is that a person is looking for something, and they temporarily they can get excited, but it's not catering to the real central part of the person. You know, the vacation. Vacation, if a person is using it and he has relaxation and he can involve himself in his studies, and then it'll serve the right purpose. But if it's not, if he feels the vacation itself is going to give him some sort of serenity and happiness in and of itself, then he's making a mistake. Because the central part of the person is not being engaged. Okay. So, but you see that the insecure...
Yes, may I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, in what you're saying is so true, and I think, in my own humble opinion, that requires a lot of self-control and strength. In many cases, people don't have that, especially now at the time of the economy. People have real issues. They're having issues as far as they can't ignore the fact that no money is coming in and the bills are. People are having difficulty in family matters. Some people haven't even gotten to that point where they have been fortunate enough to acquire a mate, to have a family. And all these things are real, and it requires a lot of strength and a lot of faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a lot of bitachon, to go forward and say, I know it's going to be okay, there's a reason. It's a test. It's another challenge that I have to come through. But we're people. We have a lot of weaknesses.
Well, a person has to overcome the weaknesses and not give in to all these emotions. A person has to grow. A person can't stay infantile and let certain things that he can approach just overtake him, because nothing, I mean, it's very little that can stand in the way of a person's happiness if he pursues it properly and intelligently. And he recognizes, okay, I can reach the destination, I can reach a certain point where I want to be that will be good for me if I plan it out properly. And a person has to evaluate whether his feelings are going to be constructive or not. A person has to be stronger and not allow himself to, you know, to have the rug pulled out from underneath himself because of certain things. That's just going to defeat him, and that'll be even worse. So a person has to make steps, or speak to him. If he doesn't know how, speak to an individual. He has to gain encouragement and gain insight as to what direction, you know, he should take. And if he lives properly, he should also have the conviction that God can help him. So, you know, there's many things to aid a person to get him back on. All right, so that's important. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's important. I understand that it's certain people can be overcome, but that's also, there's another idea too, that a person will feel overwhelmed when really, and for each type of a feeling, there is the proper response. And for example, a person who's overwhelmed, they should try to isolate the issues that concern them and look at each one individually. If a person could do that and see how, first step is to isolate the definition. Let's say it's three things that are happening. So if a person doesn't isolate it, he just feels overwhelmed and just, he may be crippled. He just can't, you know, he's incapacitated. He can't move. But if he stops and thinks about, all right, here's the three areas that are really problems. Now, how can I approach each individual one? What would be a map of, you know, what would be the steps I can take that can help each one? Then the understanding of how it can be resolved will cause that feeling of being overwhelmed to evaporate. And also certain things are really not issues. They are, people make them out to be problems when they're really not. And the person has to, you know, reevaluate, how do I assess whether this is something which is important in life or not? So that's important.
And you're also saying, you're suggesting that the person go for some kind of help as well.
Well, yeah, if a person could first get insight and get direction from a wise individual, that's the best thing. I mean, if a person has psychological problems, of course, the psychological problem should be addressed. We're not talking about a psychologically crippled person. We're talking about where these are things where the typical type of a person might become overwhelmed, and how do I address it? And the truth is that it can have a very long-lasting positive effect once he sees in a single case how he can address problems in one time of his life. Now he knows he was able to do it once, he could do it again. So sometimes it's only
That's true.
Right? Okay.
Yes, thank you, Rabbi. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so the first thing is that the person has insecurity. That's why the person does typically look for certain things where he can point and say, oh, this is always good. So therefore, King Solomon says, no, there's a time for something. And this is a time when it's not going to be appropriate. Okay. So again, what this will now cause, it will evoke a person's need to consider, well, is this a time for something or not? Now he has to engage his intelligence and evaluate. So now what he does is he brings his attitude of his emotions of wanting to be secure, and his emotions of that a person, you know, gets attached to certain things, certain emotions. They get attached. Oh, this is a good thing. But now that I have to bring that into check and I have to assess, well, is this the right time for this attitude or this activity? Once a person starts doing that, he's now subjugating the emotion to be under the check and the assessment of his intelligence. So now the intelligence is going to determine whether or not I act this way or I act that way. Is it the right time or not? And this will help the person be happier, because now he's functioning in line with how there's certain uncontrollable phenomena that occur in a person's life always. So a person is always assessing, I wanted to do a trip today. I wanted to start this project tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Certain new things came up. Now I don't get frustrated, but now I recognize that there's a need that has to replace my original plan. And he doesn't get frustrated because he recognizes that reality is different now. Something happened during the day that now changed what he had to do. So he doesn't fight it. The person who fights it is now going to be very frustrated, because he's trying to go against reality. But for, you know, a person who accepts it, let's say a person wanted to go on a trip and then he got sick. So he's upset. He's still going to try to go, but he's got so much fever, and if he tries to fight it, of course he won't even enjoy the trip. And his state of being feverish will probably confuse what he's supposed to be doing. If he accepts he's sick and he takes his medication and rests, so in a few days he can go and enjoy the trip as planned. It's just a few days later. Right, just a simple example in terms of not fighting the reality situation. So when the intelligence is making the decisions and assessing and then determining what the right course of action should be, and when do you have to change the course, so a person is following that path, now he's in line with reality, and he'll be able to do exactly what King Solomon says. Is it time for this? Is it time for that? So a person will realize happiness that way. Now, all right, let me see if any questions or comments up to this point. Okay. So then look at the next verse is 3:9. And King Solomon says, what extra is there for the one who performs in the work that he does? Why does he ask this now at this point? Doug Cal, you're still there? You're quiet. I'm just going to make sure the line is...
No, I'm thinking.
Okay.
Would it be that if he's gone through and just made this point that, okay, you've got to go through all this intelligence and think about this and work out each of these situations, could he be asking the question he would anticipate of his listener, so I go through all that, so what? Still going to die at the end, so what difference does it make?
Well, he's not talking about death, it doesn't seem to be. He's saying, what my Yisroel, what addition is there to the performer with the work that he does?
Now, is it clear to you that the work that he does has to do with what he's just described in the previous verses, or are we shifting subjects here?
Well, it has to be in line. I mean, Ibn Ezra does say openly, normally you don't have such a help like this, but he says in his commentary on verse 12, he says, these verses, until verse 16, are connected. Okay, so clearly chapter 3 started a new topic. So therefore, if they're connected, that means verse 9 is now properly following verses that preceded it. So what is the theme now? What is the connection?
Rabbi, it strikes me that this is kind of a transitional verse that takes you from the recognition that there's a time for all of these different things, and that the awareness and the realization, the sort of facing reality at the transition to what these benefits are going to bring in aligning yourself with reality.
But he's questioning that there is no real benefit. That's the sense of his words. Meaning he's again addressing the person's predisposed thought that there is some benefit. But King Solomon says, no. What benefit is there with the work that you do? Now, what are you saying that that's transitioning to? I'm not sure.
No, I was just... I'll think on it further.
By the way, do we have a solid date for the Noachide conference yet?
Yeah, we do.
Great, okay.
I think it's June 27th, that last weekend in June.
Okay, last weekend in June, very good.
27th, 28th?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
The 26th would be
there. Okay, so when it says over here, what benefit? Evidently, the person thinks that there is some benefit, but why does he address that now? So, Ibn Ezra says that now that considering the fact that all matters, their happiness and the appropriate nature of performing them depend on it being a proper time. So benefit is it to the man with all his work? Because there'll come a time when it'll be destroyed. And his wealth will be turned away, he'll lose it, and he'll end up empty, end up poor. So what is he saying? He says again, my Yisrael Ish, so what benefit there is to a person? With all of his labor, because there will come a time when his work will be destroyed or corrupted or nullified, and he will lose all of his wealth, and he'll be left empty-handed. He'll be left poor. So he really spells out what we said already. Meaning, based on the fact that there is a time for everything, so we basically jumped the gun. We saw from his initial series of verses where he was going. But he spells it out a little bit more in this verse, in 9, where he says, now, based on the fact that I just told you there's a time and place for everything, so if that's the case, what benefit is there in the work that you do? And it's because a person is going to, like we said, is going to attach an attitude of this being always good. I'm doing this right now, it's always good, it'll always have a value. Because it's trying, again, it's trying to cater to the person's need for having security, that I've always I've always got something here. This is always going to be a good. This will take care of me, protect me, whatever the security is, but he wants it to be constant. That a person should be in flux is something which is a problem. It goes against what our typical natures are from youth. Doesn't mean it's bad. But he's saying now, based on the fact that things have a time and place, right, they are temporal. The value is now is good, now it's not. Since that's the case, therefore he tells a person in verse 9, don't attach yourself to some work that you do, because sometimes you'll lose it. Okay, so it's really an idea we said already, but you see how he spells it out now. Right? You see how it fits into it? It's basically what we said, right?
Yeah, so is that what he's getting at then in 10 through 11 and 12? So when he says he's made everything beautiful in its time?
That's true. He continues that, but then he brings a new idea in there. That, there he talks about immortality. That's in 11. 10, we'll have to see how 10 fits in now. But like Ibn Ezra said, all these verses up to 16 are connected.
So is he saying don't attach yourself to some work that you do or any of the things that you're doing, but just ultimately eat and drink and enjoy life? Because that's where he ends up in 13.
Yeah, 13, when he says that, I believe he's telling you that the moment that you're in, meaning what you're doing, the enjoyed step day by day. And the truth is, a person can be very happy if they're not protracting where they're going to derive their enjoyments from. So many people plan so much, and they work hard, and they put away so much money, and guess what? They die before they even spend it, and they end up living like a person who was working, you know, 1% of their time, because they tried to amass more, and they did amass more than what they could even use. In practice, it was just impossible to spend everything. So what he really tells you is that the person is going to eat and drink. I mean, what's going to be the real enjoyment that you have? It's what you personally experience. Right? What he eats and what he drinks, and that he has a certain satisfaction in the work that he does. And he realizes also that his wealth is a gift from God. So therefore he's not protracting and having big highfalutin plans and trying to look like fantasy is something which never takes place. Because a fantasy is always in the future. He's telling you, know, the moment, I believe that's what he's touching on in 13. That's what he says in 12, right before that, I see that there is no good except for man to be happy and to do goodness in his life. Meaning in his life, the now. But that again, we're going in reverse order over here because we're going 13 and 12. So let's... But what he's telling you is that, number one, things are temporal. Don't look for this or that to always be where your happiness comes from. It's not the object or the activity, because sometimes that has to change. Really, it's the fact that you adjust to reality. That's where your happiness will come from, if you are adjusting. And if you accept at certain times what you like to do, you can't do. And now something else has to take that place. Right, like the example we gave. And since that's the case, that's why he says 9, that what benefit is there in this, if you look at the specific? If you're living in the specific and you say, this thing must give me happiness right now, well, sometimes it's not going to give it to you. So it'll frustrate you. But if you reevaluate and you say, well, King Solomon's right. I shouldn't be looking for A to always be something which affords me happiness. What's going to afford me happiness is not the object, but it's how I relate to circumstances. Do I use my intelligence the best that I can? So that's what he tells you in 9, because things are transient, because there is change in your life, so therefore, don't try to invest too much in one thing. That's what he means in 9. What benefit are you going to get into that work that you just did, this specific thing? Don't look for that specific thing to be what gives you. It may be a time where it's good, maybe not. Okay, for example, A person could be working in the industry of handheld radios, and all of a sudden the internet comes about. If he keeps on working in handheld radios, he's going to start realizing that he can't feed himself because something else took the place of communications. So he has to adjust. He should now train himself into that new area. Then everything will work out fine. But if he says, no, you know, the handheld or the CB, whatever the radio is, and this is my industry, and this is what I'm always going to stay with, if that's the case, then he's going to harm himself. And perhaps that's what he means in 10. How can we understand the next verse now? Verse 10. I mean, do you see what I'm saying, Doug?
I do, Rabbi. Thank you.
Okay, well, we'll have to elaborate on the verses, you know, specifically as we get to them. Let's just see his path now. So that makes sense up to this point, up to the end of 9. But now he says something which is a little enigmatic. He says, I've seen the matter which God has given to the sons of man to afflict them.
It says afflict?
Yes, la'anos, enoi. Enoi means affliction.
As in pain and discomfort.
Yes.
But what the translation I'm looking at says, I've seen the occupation that God gave the sons of men with which to occupy themselves.
Well, the word anos, enoi, is a negative connotation. Enoi is also used when it talks about Yom Kippur.
Okay, am I also correct that the verse breakings are artificial?
No, the verse breakings are divine. The chapters are artificial.
Chapters are artificial, okay, because it looks like the first part of 11 then would tie into the idea that we're saying, which is, okay, God, you know, I've seen the occupation that God gave to the sons of men, and he's made everything beautiful in its time. Meaning, okay, you can get happiness out of whatever you're doing. But if it's got the word afflict, unless he's just referring to the fact that it's an affliction that man has to work at all.
Well, I mean, affliction means to say that it's goes against our grain. Doesn't mean that it's harmful.
Oh, okay.
Afflict means, like, for example, you know, it's a good thing that we have, you know, Yom Kippur, a day of fasting, and afflict means we abstain from intercourse and eating and drinking and bathing and wearing shoes. So the affliction means it goes against what we would typically want. According to Rashi, he doesn't say it's negative. He says the word anos means to guide them, to accustom them. Let me see. Right, so, and according to the Targum, so he says it's punishment. Punishment for the wicked. But if we just go with a straight explanation in terms of the theme, the verses is what I'd like to do.
Okay, so if he says, I've seen the occupation, and this is Solomon talking, he says, I've seen the occupation that God gave to the sons of men with which to occupy or afflict themselves, which I assume is referring to the work that they have to do when he says occupation. So is he then just further elaborating and saying, so, you know, I see the truth about everyday work that people have to do, and he, meaning God, has made everything beautiful in its time. In other words, there's a time for every occupation, and every occupation can bring happiness if you're in the moment and appreciating what you're doing.
So what is his message here?
So it would be applying what we just talked about with regard to a person's work. That is, in the same sense that, you know, there's a time for this and there's a time for that, that work is the same way, and that it's not about the work itself, but it's about being in the moment with the work. When he says he's made everything beautiful in its time.
Well, you go to the next verse.
Time to make handheld radios.
But go, yeah, but
it's not a time to make handheld radio.
But you don't explain 10 by going into verse 11. Just tell me what you think 10 is telling me here. What is he? What's his point now? There must be a new point if he's right, he's spending ink on this verse. So what's the new thing he needs to tell me now in verse 10? I agree with what you're saying in 11, that there's, based on the whole thing of times, and it says, if you do things in the right time, so then it's going to be pleasant. Very good. That would, you know, we'll ask, what's the need for that? It sounds redundant when we get there. But just in terms of 10, what would you tell me if you can isolate it? It seems vague, you know? It seems like a vague statement. He doesn't say what the matter is. He just says, I see the matter which God has given to the sons of man to accustom them or to afflict. But to subjugate.
Rabbi, can I say something?
Yes.
That in my chumash, in the footnote here, it says, referring to point 10, it says clearly, I perceive that God caused man to toil in order to keep him subservient, lest he rebel against him. And that's written by Sforno.
Okay. So that's good. That's a good point. Meaning, I see the matter which God has given to man to keep him subservient. I mean, the new point, according to Sforno, is that this matter, and we'll have to see how this does it. Meaning, how does this, what is the matter he's talking about? But he's saying, whatever the matter is, there's a benefit that it keeps man subservient to God. Let's see if I can find here. Rishis Inyan. He says, I have pondered. Sforno says, I have pondered that that this is not in existence except to subjugate man. Kadesh yeh Adam Nachna, in order that man should be humbled. And he shouldn't purposely rebel against God, like Adam the first did. Okay. So King Solomon is saying a very new point, that this is now to keep man humble. Well, how is it doing that? And what is doing that, according to Sforno?
Well, when things are not going well, man can just make all kinds of complaints.
But he's not talking about...
When actually... You could be tested, he's being tested, and as you said, really has to accept how things are rolled out.
So you're saying that King Solomon's referring to the fact that there is change. Since there is this existence of change, where certain times this is a good, certain times it's not bad, since things change, and man has to adjust, this is something which King Solomon, according to what you're saying, is keeping him humble before God. He won't rebel because he's occupied.
Mm-hmm.
He's occupied, okay. So it's an occupation.
Basically, he knows who the boss is. In other words, he doesn't have the power to change anything. Maybe what he has to do is to be humble and to accept and to have faith that it's going to work to his benefit eventually.
Meaning if things were constant...
I mean, even if we're punished, it's really still to our benefit in some sense. Because we're getting the punishment here to cleanse us so we're pure for the afterlife. It's deep. It's very deep.
Well, he seems to be saying that this matter which God gave, what's the matter he's talking about, is the fact that things are not constant. Things aren't static. Had things been static and everything good, see, that's what he means about Adam. Why does he bring in Adam the first over here, this Sforno? I'll read you the Sforno again. He says, I have seen this matter, meaning I, Sforno, I have pondered. This is only in order to subjugate man, to make him subservient to God. In order that man should be humble, and he shouldn't purposely rebel like Adam the first. What is he bringing in Adam the first for? What was the situation wherein Adam the first lived as opposed to us today?
Well, Adam rebelled.
No, Adam didn't have to work.
Right, he didn't have to work. He had everything he needed. And yes, he did rebel, but I was asking him what the situation was. What was his life, the situation he was in? He was in a situation where everything was perfect. So now what Sfarner was saying is an interesting point. He's saying that now that we have to shift and change and constantly react and respond to changes in life and needs that we have, this is a good thing in order that we are no longer in the state where we had everything catered to us. We didn't even have to worry about food or anything. There was no concerns whatsoever. And that would have been the perfect state for man. But man abused that. And therefore, it is a demonstration that man needs something to occupy his energies. And by doing that, he will not go into the area of rebellion. So King Solomon is saying the reason why we have a situation today where God created a reality where needs constantly change, because this necessity for us to work and address, oh, now the cold weather's coming in, we got to have a warmer house, so we got to get the insulation, buy clothing, we ran out of food, we got to work and get some more food, have more children, they have needs, we have to take care of them. So all these different activities are a good for man, because had man had no need to address anything, so he would have been naturally rebellious, is what what Sforno was saying. And therefore, the word anos here means afflict, means to subjugate man. So King Solomon's he's making a commentary saying this was not always the state of existence for man. Man wasn't always in a state. Really, before the sin, laughter and happiness and everything, that was good all the time. But because of that, and man had such a tremendous amount of energy, man's libido, man's energy is so much that if things are static, he shifts. His attention shifts, and there's a need for a certain amount of, he has to go to different areas. So it seems to be, it's the way that we're designed as human beings, that we can't be focused on one thing all the time. And because of that, we're going to shift our attention, and sometimes it's going to go into the area of the ego. I want this. Yeah, it's true, God told me we can't eat that fruit, but Adam and Eve, they both ate from it anyway. But if they were involved in different needs and working on a daily basis, their energies couldn't have gone into that, because, or it would have been less likely, because they would have been preoccupying their energies in work and toil and plowing and whatever they needed. And by the end of the day, they'd be tired and they'd need to sleep and do it again. So that's a good thing, King Solomon is saying. He's saying that this very phenomena, that there's a time for this, there's a time for that, that's, he's saying, a design of God, in order that it keeps man preoccupied and his energies are going into different areas, which taps out his energies to a right amount. In Pirkei Avos, the rabbis even say that any Torah without a worldly pursuit, meaning without work, it will end in sin, or it won't be successful. Because the energies, it's true, wisdom is the most important area to put our energies in, but our energies can't be totally satisfied in that. There has to be a certain amount of physical exertion, there has to be a certain amount of accomplishment. If we don't satisfy that in learning, so then they're going to be used in incorrect areas. You see the idea?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Doug, can I see that?
Yes. Thank you.
Interesting. Interesting insight from Sforno. That's why he brings in Adam. Off the cuff, what's Adam the first have to do with this? No, he's trying to contrast. That situation, he wants us to think about what happened in that, and what was his environment? What was the standard of living that he had that led to his sin? Oh, all his needs are taken care of. So since that's true, so why did he sin? So it leads us to think. He just says, all Sforno had to do is tell us a little bit And we go step by step. Okay, if that was what caused the sin, that means that there was an insufficient satisfaction that he had, and he had to put energies to other areas. So we just put two and two together, and we see now how the state that we have today addresses that.
Rabbi?
Yes.
So, let's talk about wealth for a second. Does that suggest that a person who, through whatever source, suddenly has so much money that they do not need to work clearly for the rest of their lives is actually in a very dangerous state?
Yes. You see that? I read a story once about somebody who won the lottery, and he ended up giving money to this family member, that family member, and they squandered it, and this one died from an overdose because they weren't working either. Now what am I going to do with my money? What am I going to do with my time? So they started going into areas that they normally would have done. If they were working and they had to hold down a job, they wouldn't have experimented with drugs. But now that they didn't need it, look what happened. And after this, after a year or whatever it was, the guy said he wished he never won the lottery. It puts a person in a very dangerous situation. Very dangerous. The regular energies that normally are put into constructive areas, like ambition and accomplishment and ego, these things have to be satisfied. They are in us for a reason. But if something happens where they're not being satisfied, now the mind is now going to start going into a whole different pattern, and it can be very destructive.
So does that then suggest that I would say that in America, it's almost an axiomatic goal that everybody wants to become financially independent and wealthy. Does that suggest that that is not a good goal, and that rather a person should focus instead on providing adequately but continuing to be involved in work?
Yes, for sure. That's stated by the rabbis throughout, many times. That we just quoted in Pirkei Avos, that it says, a life of study joined with a worldly pursuit will cause a person to forget sin, meaning he won't be involved in sin, because now the two different areas of his intelligence and also his emotions are being properly... He's expending his energy properly and constructively. But if he doesn't, so then, again, it's going to throw his emotions into a pattern that he's unfamiliar with, or it'll be very destructive.
Does that also then suggest that the idea of retiring is a complete non-starter, so to speak?
Yeah, I believe retirement is a bad idea. Because the person has these emotions until the day he dies. So, barring any inability to, physically to perform certain activities, a person should always be involved in this entire life. I would not want to retire. And if there's certain things that you enjoy, and you see that in work, your creativity, your accomplishment, and your learning, it's an enjoyable day. And what we have to do is really see, when are we most at peace, most enjoying ourselves? It would seem to me we're making progress on the family front, in our careers, in our intellectual, we have a good mix of enjoying the outdoors. If that's what we see, and that is true, where the entire person is spending his energy properly in the right proportions, so that should be a snapshot that he sustains his entire life.
Rabbi?
May I quote Rabbi Avigdor Miller saying, in reference to retiring, that a person, man or woman, should always be productive because it prevents insanity?
Yes.
Agreed. And that's in reference to not retiring. People should always be kept busy. Busy is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Prevents insanity, you said?
Yeah. Rabbi Avigdor Miller, may he rest in peace, had made that statement in one of his lectures, that a man and woman should avoid any kind of retirement. I mean, they could retire from their jobs, but do other things that would, you know, hobbies, whatever it is, to keep them busy, because staying and doing nothing can cause insanity. They're not productive, and their minds go off in different areas that they don't know how to deal with. Busy is a good thing. That's what he stated. I believe it's true.
Right. Cal, you had a question?
Yes, I did. I was just wondering if this suggests, going back to Adam, that if it weren't Adam, it would have been someone else along the line that would have, you know, created original sin in this, that sense, just because of the way man is made.
Right. I mean, God knew what would happen, but he does not make a change to mankind unless man demonstrates the need for it. So he gave man the perfect, you know, the optimal situation, and knowing very well what he would do, but he still wanted man to have the opportunity. And because if God would have made man working from the outset, we could have a gripe and say, well, why couldn't you just make us away when we didn't need to work? So this answers that question. So it's only when the need is there does God respond. But
when you talked about the only difference between Adam and us was the fact that he didn't have to work. But the new knowledge that he gained from eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, that also changed man, didn't it?
When he ate from that tree, so that... Yeah, there were a number of changes, right? I'm not saying that's the only difference.
Okay.
That was the main difference in terms of the context.
It's
the
difference between the physical.
Well, yeah, there were a number of changes that did take place, just a few, I think two or three, between Adam and Noah. But I was just referring to in terms of the environment. So if I mistakenly said that that was the only change, that was wrong. Yeah, there was a change in terms of man was given work, he had to work. There's also a change in the he was given the conscience. So now he knew morality. That's why they were embarrassed, and they recognized that nudity was not morally good anymore, because they didn't have morals up to that point. They were only involved in the world of true and false. That's really the highest level of knowledge. So morality wasn't something which they had. Therefore, they could be nude and not have any sense that there's anything wrong with it, because the concept of right and wrong did not exist in their minds yet. That was given to them afterwards, in order that they can have like a secondary break system before they would sin. Now, before the sin, you know, with the eating of the fruit, there was no sense of remorse, because there was no morality. It didn't exist yet. Afterwards, when they were about to sin to do something, they sensed the feeling, oh, this is bad. I feel bad about this. A sense of guilt. That was given as a way to help slow them down from sinning. So that was another change that was made. And then there was a change made by the times of Noah, that man's stature and his longevity were both cut down, because that added to his sense of permanence. And that's why they sinned so grievously during that those generations that preceded the flood, because since they did live so long and they were of such, you know, stature, that contributed to their inflated egos, and they didn't need to listen to anybody. So there was a change made then too, but those are the only changes.
Was that secondary break system, do we also refer to that as the conscience?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So he said that is what his comment is on 10. That now he's, King Solomon is reflecting on the matter he just discussed. The things are not always good. It depends. There's a time and place for everything. Therefore, a person should not feel so attached to a certain action or activity. That's verse 9, right? And then his commentary of 10 is that this is the reason for it. There's got to be a reason for this now. It was good that he could talk about the phenomena, and then he should address the attitude that people have towards the phenomena. But then he goes, 10, if we want to categorize that verse, means he's describing what the justice is in that, that God made the world that way, since it wasn't that way by the times of Adam.
I have to thank you, Rabbi, because when one reads word by word, line by line, you really cannot see the meaning. Appreciate that you're explaining it. It's amazing. There's so much there. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, so you know what? Let's. I have an idea on 11.
Yes.
I would like to. Let me develop it more.
Okay. Did the rabbi hear me?
Excuse me?
Did the rabbi hear what I just said?
Yeah, I heard you.
This is Rivka. I'm saying that I appreciate that you're explaining it, because when one is reading word by word or line by line, the meaning is not so clear.
Yes, I heard you. I said
you did hear it. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for mentioning it.
Okay. Okay.
Now, let's see. So 11, we're up to 11 now, right?
Yeah.
So what does he say in 11? He says, all is proper in its time. All has been done, meaning all has been created. It's proper in its time. What is he referring to? He says, also the world has been planted in man's heart in order that he should not see the matter from beginning to end, which God has done, from beginning to end. So Ibn Ezra mentions on that the person lives his life as if he's going to live forever. So he now talks about the phenomena again, and this is what you touched on before, Doug, that everything has its time, and everything is proper in its time, too. He says, gum, even, meaning he's now telling you, now, based on that principle, that there's a time for everything. And things, and when it is a time for something, it's proper in its time. It's pleasant. It's perfect, and it should take place at that time. He says, even, meaning he says, when he says the words, even, that means an example of this will be the immortality fantasy, that the world is planted in man's heart. He's saying that even this, now we have to ask why he's going into this area of immortality now. He says that the world has been planted in man's heart, that he should not know the day of death. A person should feel a sense of permanence. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave you with the question, because I'm not satisfied that I have an answer. But this is clearly what he's talking about. And if you read the verse, he says, all has been done proper in its time. And what's an example of that? Even the world is planted in man's heart. Meaning, the sense of permanence in the world, the immortality. So now the question we have is, why does he go into this now? Okay, so we'll work on this. And we'll pick up next week on that. Okay? Any questions or comments at this point?
Nope. Very helpful class, Rabbi. Thank you.
Okay. All right, then. So I wish you a good week, and we'll pick up with this, with your thoughts on this a week from today.
Okay. Thanks, Rabbi.
Okay.
You have a great week, too.
Thank you. Be well, everybody.
Okay. And Doug, we'll have to get back to you regarding the question you had. Whether the Noahites have to follow. If you want, you can give Rabbi Chait a call, find out, regarding whether you have to follow that command of not mentioning the names of idols. It could
be. Maybe I'll drop him an email and get it in his question queue.
Okay, very good. Let me know what happens.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, and Laura in Washington, you're welcome.
Hello.
Yes?
Yeah, I missed some of the previous lectures. I was wondering if they're going to be posted online.
Yes, today I'm going to put both. We did the last class we had was 2 weeks ago. Up to 2 weeks ago, everything is online. And what I'll do is I'll put now today's class and two weeks ago on the 10th also there was a class. So the 10th is when we started. Okay, so give it like 15 minutes and it'll be online.
Did I miss two? I think I missed two. The two classes that are. That haven't been posted, I think.
Right, today's and
we'll see.
May 10th and today. Okay, I'll make sure they're online.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thank you.